The Mike Missinelli Show.
Mike Missinelli. 97.5 FM, Philly's first FM sports station. We on an uneven playing field, top of the totem pole. 97.5, Mike Missinelli Show. Si, senor, we numero uno. And internationally large, just like the sumo. 2-6, Monday to TGIF. Mikey misses the Philly, where Haiti's the wide clef. A man of the people, ambassador. Put this bull in the ring, they turn the matadors. Our competition completely non-existent. Burning up the phone lines, record number listeners. All the biggest names and the hottest topics. A runaway train in the drive time slot. It's kinda hard to stop us. On remote, standing ovation just like the opera. The best show on earth, I feel that's very proper. The most electric sports talk, ain't no need to shock ya. Turn your radios up, Mike's ready to rock.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Mike Missinelli Show. It is a Tuesday show right here on 97.5 The Fan. We're broadcasting from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast. So, you know, it's an interesting take that we have to look at this team that has to play the Giants on Thursday with very little preparation and very little bullets in the chamber. And I go, what? This is a game that they absolutely have to count on winning, right? There is no room for them to lose this game, because if they lose it, I gotta be honest with you, if they lose it, I'm all for the bad season. I'm like, if they lose Thursday, I'm all for the win as few as you can here. and see where that goes. It doesn't, once you lose to the Giants, it really doesn't matter. Even though the Cowboys, They're dreadful. They're about to fall apart. All these cowboy weasels are in hiding. So I guess technically you can still win a division. You win, I don't know, maximum six games. We might be able to win it with five at this point. But at that point, what, really? Is that what you're supposed to root for? Like a 5-10-1 season just so you can get into the playoffs? That's why this is a must win. And I hope they can coach their way past this. And we're just talking about the coach, Anthony and I, and it's interesting, like, whether Doug, there's a lot of people who like Doug Peterson in this town. And I'd like to know, like, if you're listing assets of your coaches in this town, and you start with Doug Peterson, like, what are the assets that you like about him? Except the intangible like is, it looks like his players play for him. Now, I don't know how much they play for a coach at the pro level. It's not like college, where a college coach that holds the hammer on you and you respect him and you know, he means everything to you. I don't know where a pro coach fits on that level. But if you're looking at Doug as a fan, what are the good things you think he does, and then line up, well, these other things here, like the others. You go good and others, and try to balance it out. Now, does the good list come out bigger than the others, Tyrone?
Well, we haven't done the list.
In your head, like if you're sitting down and you go, all right, I got it. Well, if I go the good parts, I go boom, 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 boom. And the other ones, you go boom, boom. You know?
I think I'd be about even.
You'd be about even?
I think so.
All right.
I think I'd be about even.
Okay, here's my thing. This is the discussion I was having with Anthony. It's like the a coach, to me, has to really be good on his feet. There's so much to be good, and there's a lot of responsibility. Don't get me wrong, because you have to formulate a game plan. You have to meet with your assistants. You have to go on the same page. You have to look at what the other team's doing. You have to attack them, their weaknesses, to put together a game plan. I know that's all comprehensive study work, and it's not easy. But when the game starts, you also have to be at that other level where you go, okay, the game is proceeding this way, so I got to compensate for this. And I have never... I don't know, maybe I'm shortchanging 2017. But it always came to me that he's not that great of a thinker on his feet. And so you're talking about the two-point conversion and the ability to think on your feet. It's the click mechanism in your head goes, okay, looks like we're going to score a touchdown. So if we score a touchdown, I got to be ready with a two-point conversion. So I'm thinking we go in this direction. So then when the moment comes, it goes, boom, it's natural. Okay, we're going to do this. Now, in that moment, he knows his offensive line is a shambles. In that moment, he knows that the other team's line is stout. And so I don't understand, like, the perception of the play doesn't dawn on him until late, and it's a play that doesn't jive with the circumstances. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, all the personnel. He has to know that when you're running that read option, it's Boston Scott back there and not Sanders.
Another factor. He doesn't have the back that can really do it.
Right.
And so the only thing that you can do there, the safest thing, probably the most effective thing, is to roll your quarterback to the side he likes to go mostly. And this way he's got a run pass option. He's also got guys out there that are running in each other that somebody might like hit a pinball cushion and go free for a split second because you only have to throw like a 5-yard dart to complete it. So like the ball's going to get there quickly. So soon as the guy gets open, boom, it's a touchdown. Just like you play it in the schoolyard.
Right. And the court at that point, it's the game. He's not worried about how small the window is. You have to give him a chance to make the attempt and then maybe something happens. That play, because it's slow developing there, one missed block is all it took to blow it up. Mailata blocks the wrong guy, and boom, it's done. Mailata hasn't played a lot of football. That's another thing you have to know. Maybe with Peters, a guy who's played a lot of football, he knows right there, I see the defense, I know which man to go on this play. Mailata may have never run, Westbrook mentioned that yesterday. Mailata may have never run that play before. He might not have had a clue who to block. He knows how to pass block on a rollout. I'm saying he's done that before. He knows how to do it. He'd have been the line probably would have been more comfortable blocking that play than an RPO in that spot.
And here's the thing that unfortunately a coach can't get off the hook by saying a day or 2 days later that when we looked at the film, yeah, maybe I could have done a better job calling that play. You don't have the time to do that. It's a live action thing that you already you don't have the liberty to look at it the next day because it's live action. And depending on it's a win-lose situation there. That's why that has to be known at the moment, not on Monday. And he's done that a couple of times. And it bugs me about him. So when I put down the good of him, I go, it looks like the players accept them. Like, I don't even know if like is the word, but I don't know if pro players like a coach or not. But they accept them, and they play that accordingly because they don't give up, and that's a good thing. And it may be the most major thing. But the other side, I always thought a coach's best attribute is that whether you're a bastard or whether you're a nice guy, to give your team a plan that is successful, that takes advantage of your strengths and the other team's weaknesses, that sniffs out the other team's weaknesses and sniffs out your specific strengths. And I don't think he does that very well. So there's that. And I know I'm probably in the minority. The guys won a Super Bowl. There are people out there, you're talking through your rear end. Probably Natalie's saying that right now.
No, I'm not. I've been calling out Doug all season.
Yeah, you have, but you also have great reverie. He won a Super Bowl, so he's got that Super Bowl glow about him.
Not in my eyes. It's very dim. There is no glow.
All right.
I want to win another one.
I also think he's a little too rigid. I think that you should. Belichick's the best at it, and I'm not going to hold anyone else to the Belichick standard. But Belichick gets Cam Newton this year, the offense instantly looks different. Now, you can say it because I think Doug still wants to call plays for a quarterback that's different than Wentz. And I think he's yet to actually cater his offense for the quarterback. And I think that's the issue. I think the part of the reason why the quarterback has to hold the ball and spin magic is the quarterback is a vertical quarterback. That's who he is in his DNA. Just like Cam Newton's a running type of quarterback. Running and passing is in his DNA. So they don't run the same offense as they did with Brady. Even though they've been doing it for 20 years, they instantly said, Cam Newton's different. Let's play different. I think that Doug, in some ways, is still stuck with Foles and that paint-by-numbers mentality when he doesn't have a paint-by-numbers QB. So people say, oh, why is it when things get out of hand, he looks better? Because he likes to throw down the field. The offense should be designed to go down the field. The players, everything should be mid-range or more. He never does that, and then he holds it too long because he's waiting for guys to do secondary routes.
I totally get it. But then why does the coach sanction a Jalen Hurts type?
Because that's Doug wants what Doug wants.
Because that's to go back to.
Yeah.
That's running, but that's RPO, only he'll keep it more than Foles did. Foles was never a threat to keep it when they ran all those RPOs.
But Hurts isn't 100. A throw the ball down the field guy.
But, right,
really?
But he doesn't want that. Wentz is. I'm saying that Coach doesn't want that. Coach wants RPO. The only difference is Hurt would keep it much more often than Foles because he's much more of a threat. Even if he's not Lamar Jackson, he's clearly a better athlete than Foles and would do more running, and I think that's what Doug wants. And he doesn't want to change for Wentz. He'll just wait 2 years and go with the guy that does what he likes.
All right. Well, on that note, there's a story today from our friend Tim McManus. He actually has some really interesting sentences in this story. But the one sentence is that he's reiterating a CBS, recent CBS report that, quote, Howie is on the prowl for a trade deadline acquisition and is eager to make a deal. Now, I assume that that would be a good thing. But I also worry about, like, this is this mindset that they think they're good now and they need to add somebody to push them over the top. And I don't see that because I see almost a team that has to turn over for some older players. So I don't know what that means, that he is on the prowl for a trade deadline acquisition. All you're going to get, really, is a veteran player who's close to 30 anyway, if not over 30. So, and then I look at the state of the Eagles. They next year are expected to be $69 million over the salary cap. And they don't have a lot of talent that you look at, like, next year, you know, things are going to be great. So those things worry me. And so what Tim says at the end, and I'll just read the sentence because I don't know if you agree with it or not. What the Eagles are is a title team past its prime, one that scratches and claws and shows enough resilience to convince itself it is still a contender. Well, that's a pretty damning statement.
So I agree with that.
I think I completely agree with
that.
So I wonder how fans feel about that. And also, if you're writing, I do the evaluation of Doug for me. I'll step back. Because it really has bothered me that the thinking on the feet thing has lacked with this guy. So we'll talk about it. 610-632-0975. That's how you get in. It's the Mike Missanelli Show on a Tuesday. A lot of phone calls today. We're back after this.
The Mike Missanelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
All right, let's talk some more football issues. The man who joins us every Tuesday, he is the preeminent NFL reporter for ESPN. He is Sal Palantonio. Hello, Sal Pal.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
Good.
Good, good, good. It's a wild week because you got this quick turnaround and, you know, you got this division game with the Giants and you got a lot of players hurt. So where do you want me to start?
Well, let's start with what the outlook is for this game, because they're going to miss two more. Actually, they're only reliable, I would think, offensive weapons in Ertz and Sanders. So what do you expect that they'll be able to do on Thursday?
Well, I think the first thing that they have to do to do a better job of protecting Carson Wentz. And if they don't do that, and there's a number of ways that obviously you can do that beyond just max protect. You can design plays to get the ball out more quickly. You can design plays with misdirection involved. You can design more plays for Jalen Hurts so that he is more of a decoy and more of a help to Carson Wentz. I am not advocating taking Carson Wentz off the field and putting Jalen Hurts on the field, especially in a quick turnaround game like that. That would be a disaster. But I think you drafted Hurts. You obviously have a set of plays for him. I will utilize him a lot more to basically give the defense a different look, because from the get-go, the Ravens just decided they were going to blow through the right side of the Eagles' offensive line, attack it, whether they were running or passing. You go back and you watch the tape, the right guard was, Mike, he was just ineffective, shouldn't have been on the field. And then after Driscoll got hurt, they put that young man, Brett Toth, in there, and he got sacked on in the first play. They didn't design a protection for him. Carson didn't slide anything over to help him. The play that they called was, you know, misguided, considering that you had a brand new guy out of West Point, a part-time ROTC instructor from Arizona State. I mean, he's a lot of things. Good-looking young man. He ain't a right tackle in the National Football League.
Okay, you can't go back to Jamon Brown then, right? So you can't. Well, so what are they going to do at those two positions on the right?
I'm actually anxious to see what happens. I really am, because it's a short week. You know, we're getting obviously very little look at the team, and the injury reports are not very encouraging. So they're going to have to design very quick stuff so that Carson is not just brutalized like he was in the last game. You know, I love ESPN stats and information. I live by them. They're great people. They do great work. They're always accurate. They said Carson was hit 16 times in a game.
Mm-hmm.
No way. Had to be 30 times in the game, right?
Yeah, he got baked.
I mean, Mikey, I just hope that they have stuff in their book, and it's a voluminous book. I know what it looks like. It's big. Just start trotting out some of those plays so that they get the ball out quickly.
Well, this is interesting.
Roll them out.
Yeah, I agree.
A lot of stuff. Move the launch point. Do the stuff that Stefanski did for Kirk Cousins and he's now doing for Baker Mayfield. When you have an offensive line that is basically the guys you would start in the fourth preseason game, Mike, you got to help number 11.
Well, I agree 100%. Now, here's the other side of the coin. They're going to have to do that by trial and error, because they're basically going through, like, a walkthrough and a half to prepare for this game on Thursday? They don't have a lot of time to smooth those things out.
Nope, they don't have much time. It's going to be a very, very interesting game. I mean, the NFC East is right now just, you know, underwater. A winning percentage of 229. 229. Lowest ever. After 6 weeks in one division in the NFC East. Do you know the NFL right now, for the first time, going into week 7, has 10 teams, 10, Mike, with either one win or zero wins for the first time going into week 7. That's almost a third of the league. And all of it is concentrated, most of it is concentrated on the East Coast. That's why if the game doesn't have Tom Brady in it, or Aaron Rodgers in it, you're having a problem getting people to watch the big population centers in the NFC East. Washington, New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia are not watching these games because the teams are so bad. I mean, listen, I made a 25-year living at ESPN, not because I'm good-looking or I'm smart, but because I cover the NFC East. It's always been, you know, gangbusters. But what happened with Dallas last night, it's pretty dreadful.
Yeah, it really is. Let me read something I read in Tim McMaz's story today, and I want to get your reaction to it. He said, what the Eagles are and what they've been for the past few seasons is a title team past its prime, one that scratches and claws and shows enough resilience to convince itself it is still a contender.
That's a brilliant line by Timmy Mac. And I would just like to point out one thing off of that. How has that manifested itself? Or what have we seen that is clearly making that a true statement? And that is, all you got to do is compare what happened in Dallas last night. And here's Mike McCarthy. Now, if you didn't need any more evidence that the team is not listening or not responding to a coach or not fighting for a coach, all you have to do is look at that game last night, right? And clearly the Philadelphia Eagles, Mike, are still fighting for their coach and one another. And of all the punishment that Carson Wentz took on Sunday, he was still in the fight, and he had everybody on the team in the fight down to the end. Now, that was a bad play call. Doug Peterson has admitted it on a two-point conversion. You don't want a zone read run play when, you know, you don't have enough guys to block it. One, two, it comes in late. Three, Jordan Mailata, you know, just misses a block. And the Ravens have been run blitzing and pass blitzing on every single down. It was a bad idea. You needed to have Carson Wentz to have the option to throw the football, not run with it. And Doug understands how bad of a call that was.
And, see, that's alarming to me, Sal. You see, a coach has to think on his feet that way. I mean, we went through these parameters on what was wrong with calling a play like that. The coach has to know that, no?
Yes. 2,000%, no question. Has to know.
All right. Yep.
Maybe he just, you know, didn't have it on the sheet, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's going to be a really, really fascinating game on Thursday. When you have two teams like this, backs against the wall, in a division that still is winnable. I mean, when you win the division and make the playoffs, you make money. You know, players want to make money. And, you know, it's still going to be exciting if they have a home playoff game if they win the division somehow, some way. I mean, I'm looking at the schedule, Mike, and I'm trying to figure out how they even get to 6 wins, really.
I think the same thing. Right? So if they lose this game, you could pretty much blow taps at this point.
Yeah. Tuesdays with Sal will be something else. you can fill it with elevator music.
All right. Listen, one last question for you, because we're getting asked this a lot. And I don't think he's in trouble, but I don't know how the owner perceives Howie Roseman in the front office and the job that they have done here. And I know they're all injured. But, you know, they also have not done a great job in supplying this team players.
Hold on a second. You think that Jeffrey Lurie is going to fire Howie Roseman in the middle of a pandemic?
No. I'm talking about after the season, when things all shake out, is he in trouble?
Talk to me about that after the season.
Okay.
First of all, there's no way he's ever going to do it, and there's no way he ever should do it. You're not going to put a man out on the street and win you a Super Bowl, first of all, in the middle of a pandemic. That's silly. It's dumb. Has he made some big mistakes? Yes. Big, big, big mistakes. Absolutely. I'll be the first person to say that. But we're not firing Howie Roseman in this town. That's not how we do business. Forget that.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're going to do it either. But I'm wondering if a two-win season alters their thinking in the offseason.
It would alter my thing.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
all right. Listen, thanks, brother. We'll talk to you.
All right, I'll talk to you.
Sal Powell on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. No, I'm not talking in the middle of a pandemic. I'm talking about a two-win season where the owner goes, well, come on.
Everything else was business as usual in the pandemic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
For the NFL?
Yeah. So, I mean, and I don't think, again, I'm on the record saying he's going to have another bad year for the owner to even think about it. But people ask the question all the time.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.